Because it had instructions to it.
Okay, so John, what, where are we on paper?
Where are we on what?
Paper.
We got a lot of it.
Well, I didn't realize that. What should we be looking at?
Well, as far as amendments go, you're all done. As far as I'm aware, you're all done with everything that you had on your lists, except for going through the legislative assistants, legislative employees, legislators. And I don't know if you wanted to re-review the sanctions too. I think possibly that was another thing you wanted to do. That was it from what you had left over. Between Lori Otto and me, we had a number of suggestions. And then there was the new stuff from Michael Josephson.
Right. And Brooke, where are we on the APOC stuff? Have you reread now the latest version on APOC consistency and cross sanctions?
Mm-hmm.
And did we adopt?
It looks good. There's one concern that we have, and that is that perhaps the restrictions on lobbyists participating in campaigns should be added in the prohibition section that's in the back of the bill, so that it is sanctionable by APSC under 2445 as well. In other words, that the official or
right.
employee could be sanctioned, and equally the lobbyist could be sanctioned. And since that's already part of the bill, seems like it could be inserted. I talked to John a little bit about it last night.
I don't see any problem in cribbing the language and moving it to where you added. You added another section to that, so just put number 9 in there.
Good. Why don't we just consider that a conforming amendment if that's agreeable?
Also, Mr. Chairman, I think we, House members anyway, we had a lot of time last night to kind of go through the bill as we were on the House floor, and there's a couple areas that, not many, actually probably maybe just one area that I kind of like to revisit and relook at it.
Great. Okay, my real question though, John, was what paper should we be looking at and marking off of?
Well, I mean, the most recent version that you have is still version D229.
And the
15 pages that you got yesterday.
So the limitation then is there are some changes.
There are a number of changes in there that have not been incorporated.
Okay,
in
but
here.
But
you've all, I mean, I think
we're
you've all been sort of marking your own copies up. So if you cross reference with whatever you've been marking up, you ought to have everything.
Well, here's the yes, we ought to, but for example, the copy that I was marking, somehow, this is not it.
Right.
Somebody Xeroxed another copy for me that didn't have it. So maybe if you could just kind of
get
to a section.
If somebody mentions a section and there's a change that's not in here, I'll mention what it is.
Great.
Can we just literally go page by page? How did you want to do it?
Well, tell you the truth, I would, I'd like to go to Josephson's stuff first. Point by point first and deal with that.
Okay.
And then if we could go to John and Lori Otto's bigger concerns. And then the House, while you were out of the room, they had something, three things they want to visit. And then we can go, actually we didn't get through your list either, so we...
That's fine. Let's just go.
Okay. So why don't we pick up then, there should be two separate deals in front of you from Michael Josephson, commentary and suggestions, dated 4/29. Well, they're both dated all the same. And then there's another sheet called additional commentaries and suggestions that start with their expansions or additions to, they go back into other sections earlier than this. So why don't we just start on, start down with number 1.
Okay, he makes a point that it was supposed to go after 045, and I thought it was supposed to go after 055, which is where I put it. I can move it if I was mistaken.
That was a note that I had on my marked up copy, which this is not it, but I thought we put that section also into...
No, I put it in 060, I think.
We didn't move it.
I thought we moved it to accountability, but I...
Didn't we do it in principle of independent judgment?
Right.
Yeah, I've got a Xerox copy, which has your handwriting on it. Why don't you look and see if that's what you need?
I agree with you, it's not appropriate in 055, I just put it in the wrong place.
You had lots more marks on it than that.
Well, this is...
Section C, line 12, page 8.
Yes.
Section B.
Here they are.
Yeah.
I remember that motion, it did pass in 055.
055?
I thought it should be...
Yeah, it doesn't make sense in 055, it should be in 045.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Here, I actually, okay, so on, I had add 430C on page 50 into principle of accountability. Is that what we're...
Yeah, I put it in the wrong place.
Okay, so, Mr. Chairman, I move that we add 430C to principle of accountability 045.
Any objection, if not, so adopted. And then the related commentary would also be moved. Okay, number two, and this will be on page 8, line 21. On line 21, principle of independent judgment, change the interest to such interest.
So move, Mr. Chairman.
On line 21, right, where the interest, where would be, where such interest?
The revisers do not like the word such. I mean, if you put it in, they'll probably leave it in. Well, they probably won't leave it in, they hate the word such.
Okay, so they're saying the interest is the same as such interest, that you refer to the previous...
Frankly, I think the word such is a great word, and I think the word any is a great word, but the reviser hates both of those for some reason.
Well, we're not doing this for the reviser. Did somebody move the word such?
Well, except you've given the reviser the authority to make technical changes, so it'll just come right back out again.
This is against the drafting manual style.
It's just a technical point, it means the same thing either way.
They're saying, the drafter would say the interests refer to those interests in the first sentence that you stated.
Right, it's just technical.
Page 9, next, line 9 through 10, misuse of office for private gain should read either to themselves, members, their families, or friends. Was this something we changed, or was it just, is this an expansion of...
It's the friends part.
It's the friends part, you had an amendment somewhere else dealing with friends, and you didn't adopt it.
Now, we have always deleted our personal friends. I just think, Mr. Chairman, I'll move "or friends" to be added on after families in line 10.
And this is a principle.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any objection to that? If not, so adopted. Page 10, line 7, duty to report improper offers, change shall to should. I think we did that.
I don't have it.
I have it marked as, maybe it's, is it John? I have two things. I have, we changed, in fact, this was a thing that I wrote down on this copy as something that was not changed in the draft that I had thought we did. On line 5, insert anything of value after the word offer, and on line 7, change shall to should.
I'll move both of those.
Is there any objection to that?
My only comment would be, if you're going to have sanctions for a section, I don't think you should have should in sanctions, I just don't think that goes together.
That's true, that's right.
This is not, we're beyond the principle.
Right, this is sanction time.
Catherine, did you say that the copy was shall firmly?
I thought it was shall firmly reject and should caution. I thought the should came with whether you had to caution somebody.
Oh, that makes more sense.
It was discussed anyway, I'm not sure if it was actually adopted.
Well...
I don't have it down as adopted, but that doesn't mean that I...
Caution actually works better than should or shall, either one. Seems like just leaving the verb.
Just caution.
Okay, I'll withdraw that, I'll move anything of value after offer on line 5.
Is there any objection to that? If not, and then we will read, and then we will leave shall.
We change, it's not changed in here, but we change change this someplace to make sure that the bribery statutes are the same as they are for...
Yes.
It's not showing this text.
Yes.
That's in 110, that's right. It's right up above you at the top of the page.
Page 11, line 18 through 24.
Okay, this is not, this is a number one for a major change.
I don't understand the difference between the language he's got and the language that's in here now.
Okay, he had combined C and D.
Yes, right.
And his comment, I think, was that he felt that it was this, the one thing that I remember him saying is that when the legislator, including the legislator's need to spend time on official duties. That was
his comment. Was that that would eat the rest of the section up. However, the word infrequent is still in there, and that would not overuse the word. I mean, I think his point was if you put in there a legislator 8 times a day can say, I don't have the time, you go do that. That's not consistent with the word infrequent that's already in here.
Mr. Chairman, I don't see anything wrong with this language. It's a major point to him, and I will move the Josephson language in section 130 to combine sections C and D.
Just under discussion, if I could get just 30 seconds, let's take a look. Let's read through it again.
So he's got or permit. That's different than we have. We just have may not require. So he puts or permit.
I think that was specifically deleted, if I recall.
Yeah, that was the just the example we were using, where I believe it was the banking example we were using at that time.
Okay, I think his rewrite, what I heard him say, is he around?
What?
I didn't mean
think he was supposed to stay. So
I thought that maybe he would just be here for continued questions and answers.
Well, that's what I thought.
That was my assumption.
He's in town. He's not leaving until 69.
We understand. I mean, we understand what we're doing here. There's no...
Okay. To repeat, though, I think what he tried to avoid was just on page 11, line 22 and 23, was deleting this particular reference that you could rationalize everything by it allowed you to spend more time on official duties, which almost any errand or anything could be rationalized that way. He doesn't include those words in here. Laura, did you?
He also adds the word unusual. In a private activity, except in unusual and infrequent situations, which I didn't know how that would work.
Well, this paragraph's been moved. I'd like to move an amendment to the amendment. On the last sentence, my problem is only the last part of the sentence, and where the performance of service will not create the reasonable perception of improper use of government staff for personal purposes. He was using an example there of what it's going to look like to someone when they see someone going to the bank to do something.
Right, that's right.
But that may be the exact situation you're in, where you're sitting on the floor and your house payments could be in big trouble if you don't send someone down with the bank payment. And people's view of it is real different than, you know, what we're talking about here. And if you're judging on that, none of these things would necessarily work. So I'd just like to remove that last part.
I share that concern. It seems like that could cancel out your exception if you tied them together, which it does.
Right, we're trying.
You have to meet both tests. You have to meet innocence and where the performance will not create the reasonable perception.
I don't think he's talking about the taking the thing to the bank or the driving.
Well, he specifically mentioned dry cleaners. He would be looking bad if, you know, someone saw your legislative aid at the dry cleaners. And it may be that you're out of shirts and, you know, you've been 4 days on the floor and you want to, like, you know.
Of course, the whole public knows intimately whose legislative aides work for who.
Well, this town, they do.
In this town.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I'll move my amendment to amendment, I think.
Mr. Chair, can I repeat my point? I think as long as you've got the word infrequent in there, that the existing language does exactly what he wants to do. I think his new amendment doesn't really change anything. And I also think my recollection is that this phrase about including the need to put time in was put in because a lot of people were real concerned about this section. And if you take it out, you're going to raise all those concerns all over again.
John, all we we do, now wait a second here. He combines these two sections. There's really nothing there. The two sections are overlapping and basically have the same sentiment. And so I
why change the existing one then?
Well, why not?
Yes. Why not? Because it has the thing about green time.
I don't want to debate you, okay? I don't think I'm supposed to be debating you, if that's okay. Representative Finkelstein, where do you want to cut off the last, it's only one sentence.
Right, and where the performance of the service, this is what I want to remove, and where the performance of the service by legislative employee will not create the reasonable perception, etc.
Well, I think that's sort of...
So we're basically doing it more on the actuality rather than the appearance.
You know, we consult the other approach to that is in our language, we put a period after on line 22, legislative employee, and scratch out the business about spending time on official duties.
Right.
That's kind of the same.
That was
that's
way
that's the other way of doing it in addressing his point in a not overt way. I think I agree with his point. When we give an explicit example, it's like we really intended to have a sweeping rationalization for not making the thing work. Maybe we another way of, I mean, we could drop that example, and then it's down to the same point where you want to delete the last sentence of his.
Well, how about I'm willing to drop my amendment if we could go and just go to the existing language, remove that last part of the sentence on his. Either way is fine with me.
Other discussion?
Well, we would have to insert the word permit. I think we should revisit that because I think his first part of his sentence is stronger. It's more concise and it's stronger.
Well, either one's fine. Maybe you prefer that. That's fine too.
Well, you call it, Mr. Chairman. What do you want to do? Right?
Well,
I think they're so similar.
Yeah.
I don't think it matters.
Well, let's look at the example that happened to me the other day. I was just finishing up my PFD forms, and it just so happened that my secretary was going over there, and she said, "Oh, can I take that over for you?" Under his rewrite, she could not.
No, she was taking her own, wasn't she?
She was taking her own, right? But
my secretary took the whole offices.
But I've got an amendment to the rewrite which would take off that last part of the sentence, so it would be still okay.
But it says, or permit.
But it's an unusual word.
Or permit.
But except in unusual and infrequent circumstances,
yeah,
which is what that is.
Sure,
once a
year. Totally
infrequent.
And the commentary says, you know what, they're doing it for themselves. They're going to the bank for themselves. I mean, it's no big deal to take your check down there, too. And that's what my secretary did. She asked the whole office.
You know, I guess my call is, I think the first Finkelstein amendment on using Josephson language without the last clause, you know, probably gets it, and then and keeping the sanction in our bills probably gets us where we want to go.
Okay, well, that's what the motion is. He's got a motion to amend my motion, and
he's doing the right here. Okay, great. Okay, so the Finkelstein motion, is, as I understand it, would be to delete all the language in C&D except for the penalty clause on lines 15 through 17 on page 11, and insert in the place the Josephson language contained in number 5, except that after the word duties there would be a period, and the remaining clause of the sentence would be deleted. Yeah. Further discussion on it. Does that... You still have kind of a frown, but any objection to that amendment? You have a frown, Mr. Peggy?
I'm not sure what you've done.
Okay.
You've used the Josephson language?
Yes.
Including the words or permit?
Yes.
Okay, and you scratch out and where?
Yes.
And so on, and you leave the sanction provision in. In
yes.
other words, you substitute the Josephson language for the first two sentences of C, and you get rid of D.
Correct.
I understood, but I don't know. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
So, would you mind one more time?
Okay. Let's attempt it. On page 11, strike C and D. Totally.
All right.
go to number five on the Josephson. Add instead, a legislator, legislative employee may not require, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, duties, and then after duties would appear, a person who violates this section is subject to civil sanctions under blah, 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 in addition to appropriate civil penalties. Is there any further objection to the amendment? If not, so adopted. Number six, page 12, line 27, misuse of state resources for political gain. Replace language in page. Replace language.
Oh, it's just. This is just a title. Oh, no, it isn't.
I don't think he understood.
He didn't understand what we, but he thought that each individual legislator could make up that
right.
idea.
And when I explained that, he, yeah, right. he understood right. that. Right. He said we, what he said we ought to do is what
we said we do. Yeah.
Okay. Page 12, line 29. Money limit suggests 250.
So moved.
Okay. Here was my only thought on that. My first reaction was, right. And then I thought, this thing could be in effect for 10 or 15 years. And it could be that some candidates will have $250 contributions, just like many of us have $100 contributions. And that if you think about how many $100 contributions you have, over 100, wonder if you had in an election year a newsletter and like the year-end January newsletter of 91 here, and you look back on your whole years of fundraising, and as a mechanical thing, you had 200 contributors in this thing.
Well, I withdraw my amendment. You're right.
I'm just thinking the mechanics of this is going, and my guess is it's going to be one page of four, and you're going to have the bills, and then you're going to have you'll have, because we won't, the Ledge Council will set it for the average, but there'll be some people who will have 200 or say 150 contributions in the category. And then what does that mechanically look like relative to all the significant bills, all the bills you co-sponsored?
Just do it in small print.
You'd do it in small print, but at some stage it wouldn't be worthwhile if the print were too
small.
But you
have a good
small.
Point. But they can handle it. It's fine.
Now I would say 250 is probably appropriate. In 10 years,
who knows? We'll change it.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll change it.
That's, we could make it that. But, you know, we're leaving this to Ledge Council. I mean, yeah. At some point, you've got to have some discretion there, too. We should make it a moving thing, too, where it's always one quarter of the average donation by the top lobbyists.
In situations like this, unfortunately, we got all this low rollers here at the table.
Yeah, we've got the low rollers.
We need to ask Senator Figgs how many 250 contributors she has. And see if it's a page full or not.
Yeah, no, you're right, Mr. Chairman. I withdraw the
minute. I'll move it.
I don't know. Now, I would say, Mr. Josephson, just, by the way, I appreciate, if we bogged down here, if we could ask you questions, I think that would be helpful. We're remembering most of our conversation, but significant to us now probably means 250. But there may be situations that it is more than a page full of regular type in election year. Because the $1,000 contribution sometimes exceeds a couple of pages of on the APOC sheets of 20 or 30 lines.
Can I make a suggestion on that? One way you might do that, if you really think it varies so much from person to person, and I don't know if it does, you could say something like the top 10% of your contributors or something. So if you want to know how important it is to the individual, you would do it by the basis of how much that person receives money. So if you go through your list of contributors and say, all right, for me, these are significant contributors because they're the top 10 or 20%. I mean, it's just another way to look at it that would account for the variation in the amount. But I would prefer a solid amount.
I think if we leave it like this, the Ledge Council will adopt a solid amount and not a
And couldn't then the individual person go for an example? If they say, look, I've got, 50, 60 people at 250 or more, then they might say, in this case, could I get an exemption and list 500 or Sunrise? the exemption process might arguably have.
I know. Don't think we would do it. The rest of us would not allow them to do that. I don't, I can't see, I see us challenging someone for lumping their contributions. And, you know, I've got five of them and they're all out there and they've got oil industry, $10,000.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go back. I know we hate to do this, but
turn back,
page 11. Going back to the section we just did, okay. That permit still causes me a problem. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I used the example of the PFD. But I think that language would come into play, the last half of the section, if I would do on the floor almost immediately. But otherwise, I think that permit. She can't do it unless I was due on the floor. Even though she came and asked me, she was headed that direction.
I don't see it that way.
I don't see it that way. And you know, and you know, here's the thing. There, at some point, even if it's handy, you shouldn't do it. And we had this discussion, who does what, and I'm not trying to pat myself on the back or anything, but I never have my staff do my banking. I never have my staff take something to the dry cleaner. They do call the dry cleaner and say, we've got dry cleaning here to pick up. But and that's right. And that's the babysitter situation, you know, where instead of me calling my wife and saying I'm going to be late, the staff does it. But I think that's the line we're kind of at. And permitting somebody, I mean, I think you're right. If you only require, then you kind of wait around and say, are you going to the laundry? Are you going to the, I mean, are you, you know, you kind of invite somebody to do it for you.
Well, maybe you could do it that way. I don't know. I just think that, well, I don't know. It's just my personal opinion. I think that I see a problem that could arise. Totally unintentional problem. But I will just defer to the rest of the committee.
Well, maybe, you know, once again, I mean, maybe
commentary.
Maybe we need to flesh this out more, go back and look at our commentary. So that we maybe in the commentary is a place where we talk about the examples of the things that we think are infrequently okay.
Don't forget, we still have to adopt a provision to telling the LEC to use the commentary.
Right. But maybe that's the way to do it. Talk more specifically about this whole subject in the commentary. We turn back a page.
I see that.
Okay, back to, well, we've lost our quorum there. I don't know. On the bottom of page 12, the significant contributors, I don't have a problem with leaving it like this. I think now, my guess is a significant contributor would be 250. And I guess before you came back to the room, I was arguing that may change over time.
This is getting unbelievable.
Does that mean you're going to pass out 4-9 today?
But this is unreal.
It's amazing how you can manipulate the press.
We've got a quorum now, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Well, let's just go through number 8 on the 250. What's the desire of the part of the committee, if anything, on the bottom of page 12?
Well, I think I'd rather see a threshold in there, and so I'm going to move that we put back in the $250. And if there's some extenuating circumstances that the reason why it couldn't be done or doesn't make sense, they could appeal to the commission to change that.
Okay, well, Ledge Council is doing the policy on it.
to use the newsletter, and it, and 1, 2, 3 all fall underneath that.
Now, here's another way, and I don't want to sound like a broken record on this, but another way is we could put into the commentary that we believe $250 is an appropriate threshold for the limit. At this time, $250 is what we believe to be an appropriate threshold for significant contributions.
Mr. Chairman, I would amend my motion to put that in the commentary.
Is there discussion on the amended motion? Is there an objection to placing the $250 threshold in the commentary for significant contributions? If not, so adopted. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, could I just point out, I have another appointment at 9 o'clock at the Baranoff. I can come back if you like, but if there were some questions you wanted to ask, if there was some confusion on some particular issue, address now.
I don't think there's anything more or less. We're just going to hit these one by one. Did anybody have any particular concerns if we lose Mr. Josephson here in 15 minutes?
Well, we're going over stuff. Let's just keep going over stuff.
Number 9, contents of newsletters. Add the commentary.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Discussion. Any objection? If not, so adopted. Number 10, page 15, line 16 through 23. Okay. Use of non-public information, replace the following. Now, is your second sheet?
No, it's on the first. It's still on the first sheet. The one I gave the second sheet is for new ones for today.
That the second, I know, but the second sheet doesn't apply to this section of non-public information.
No, no.
Okay.
No, it's a new section.
Okay. Replace the section then on page 15, line 16 through 23, with a new section. Use of information gained in the course of legislative duties. And we're trying to, what's trying to be addressed here is to incorporate our existing confidential state language with the non-public language in one place. And John, what can you paraphrase our drafter's problem or construction? It seems like the only point here was that we were not duplicating the confidential law, or we're referencing it somewhere else, or
that's it essentially. There is a specific statute in Title 11 that says you can't use the confidential information, period, for private gain or any other reason.
And is that similar to B here?
Mm-hmm.
That is B.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's essentially the same. It's a little fleshes it out a little bit.
Purpose of 50%.
Mr. Chairman, the expansion here is mostly in the non-public. I don't really agree with the too much on the non-public beyond what we have, which is legislator may not use or disclose non-public information acquired in the course of, by reason of legislative service, to obtain a benefit for the legislator, employer, another person, etc. I think if we go beyond that, we're going to bog down. I think that's about all we could find that we could agree upon. Is that one sentence?
Okay. The other thing that we could do, well, that's not on that point, but on the confidential point, we could reference the confidential law here. You know, we could talk about, in addition, legislative employees are bound by AS blah, 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 and subject to, and we could actually here, we could say it's subject to class, what is it, A or B?
A.
By the way, I'm not sure it is A. I think the confidential, this came up on the Adams leak, and I...
The last sentence of A already says this section does not disclose the disclosure of information made confidential by law.
But that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying we can talk about by law or the confidential information made confidential under, you know, or pursuant to the, and pursuant to the sanctions under ASS, or even to say what the sanction is, subject to Class A or Class B, whatever it is, misdemeanor under AS blah blah blah.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Fix?
Could I ask Representative Finkelstein what problems he would have with Sub A as proposed by Mr. Jefferson?
This is, it's just expanding upon, we had this whole discussion before when we arrived at where we're at now. It's sort of expanding upon defining, maybe some of it ought to be in the commentary, but it's just trying to expand upon what we have now with the non-public information. We have a basic sentence that defines it. This just goes on and you know, tries to make a setting for it or something a little more.
But it is it does explain it. And it does give it a clearer picture. So if we're not going to use it here, I would sure want it because it does set a scene. It does put a setting in place. And I think that's kind of what we want to do.
I like those first two sentences on a further discussion in addition to these to the definition mm-hmm. of what we're talking about. I'm uncomfortable with words like simply learning of it or technically available to the public. I'm uncomfortable with that in statute, but I think it is an even greater expansion of what we're talking, the kind of information we're talking about.
And it makes it more realistic. I mean, it makes it understandable to the public who's reading it, to staff who's reading it, and to a new legislator who reads it. I mean, they get the picture. Because remember when we first saw the word non-public, staff, Mr. Gagin, Lori Otto, nobody liked it, but then we came around, we understand what that is now. I mean, most of my constituents think everything we get down here is non-public and that we use it to our advantage because Juneau is not accessible to them. You know, so I just think it spells it out a little bit.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll move and put A through, well, I'll wait till there's
another. Mr. Chairman, I'd like a little further clarification on the words, or I can understand, or let's see. In some cases, simply learning of information before it is generally available can provide a substantial advantages for those who use or disclose it. What do we mean by disclose it?
You would give it. You would tell your stockbroker, or you would tell your real estate guy to go buy up a couple of lots for you and for him.
Sure, I understand that. The problem I could see if because what our definition of non-public is that it was disclosed in a public meeting, but it isn't readily accessible. It may not be readily accessible for 2 weeks. But if it's disclosed in a public meeting, and records, I don't know, I just think we're walking a real fine line there.
Yeah. Michael's back.
Can I just tell you the situations we were concerned with, and they have again occurred. You might have a hearing, as many of your hearings were virtually unattended, even though they were technically public. And, you know, things are happening, and certain information is conveyed in the course of that hearing. Somebody might testify. In a realistic sense, no one knows it. Now, one of the members there says, oh, this is interesting. They go out and buy some land or tell their broker. It is a guaranteed scandal in the newspaper, even though it's not illegal. Because it appears then that that person has used his or her professional position and the special access that they had and immediately turned it to a profit. And unless you have some provision like this in the law, not just the commentary, you need a little bit in the law if you want to change the behavior, people can do that. So this was designed to say that you can't turn that information you learn. It's sort of like an insider trading thing for legislators. But anyway, that was
what
the
it says. Isn't that what it says in that?
But my question is,
well, but I, you mean the existing kind of
when does this, non-public information become public? I mean,
the definition is would be when it becomes reasonably accessible to whoever, and I don't know. In a lot of cases, that might be never. In some cases, it'd be when it appeared in the newspaper. Right.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify because I can see this being somewhat maybe a stumbling point when we argue it.
Well. Yeah, I mean, which is nothing new. I mean, that's what Lori Otto has been arguing for a couple of weeks now.
I guess the question is, do you think that behavior ought to be okay? If not, you ought to find some way of saying no. I mean, that's the point. The behavior of somebody hearing something in a hearing, technically open to the public, nobody's there except very, very few people, then goes around and purchases something, makes a big profit. Is that okay or not? To me, is the policy issue.
First of all, I think that's what this section now says. Two, Lori Otto uses exactly that example as something that should not be covered by this. I don't think Lori Otto has as much trouble with a legislator who happens to get an inside memo from one DOT agency to another DOT agency talking about land. I think what she finds most offensive is the idea that a committee hearing, which is open to everybody in the world, that you can call that non-public. I think that's what troubles her more than anything else about this.
But Lori Otto's concerned with criminality, and this would be a civil ethics violation, not a criminal violation.
That was my point.
Mr. Chairman, my constituents, John, do not think this is open down here. They don't think they have access to this. And you know what? They're right. There's no way my constituents can be here and know what's going on here. I mean, none. Unless they pay several hundred dollars for an airfare. So they don't feel we're accessible, and they don't feel that they know what's going on, or they have access to it.
Can I make a point that this is one that Lori raised, since we're on that section. Section 190A of this bill has the same language pertaining to former legislators and former aides. I would propose moving 190, the language about former legislators, into 170. Now, this is going to cause a problem because, and this is one of the inconsistencies, 170 does not carry criminal penalties. 190 does carry criminal penalties. I think the reason 190 carries criminal penalties is because the sanctions probably aren't enforceable against a former legislator. However, the Department of Law feels like they're between a rock and a hard place here, since they don't feel... You know, Lori, when she saw this, said, I thought you had taken out criminal sanctions for everything. So I think what should be done, I don't know of another answer. If you make the sanctions applicable to former legislators, I don't think they're going to be able to apply. So I think you're not covering former legislators. But if you make criminal penalties apply, you're telling the Department of Law to enforce a law that it doesn't believe it can enforce.
Yeah, I appreciate, I see that problem, and I don't know how you get out of it. It's kind of like our death penalty court rule debate yesterday. You're either doing something unconstitutional or it could be challenged.
I think the least bad option, and I'm sure it's the one that the Department of Law would prefer, would be to make the former legislators subject to sanctions only, even if the sanctions can't be enforced.
That would be my preference. Because I think we really do cross the line we've already crossed when we go back and insert criminal sanctions, frankly, in the least.
Well, she also points out, which I think is valid, even if they were attempted to enforce it, the fact that it is not criminal against an employee, and it is criminal against a former employee, would probably not fly.
And just to repeat another, this is the generic response to the post-separation penalties. A bad letter from LEC with nothing else done, even having the body not even take it up or refusing to impose the sanctions, still serves a purpose and can still, it's a public record, can be still viewed, and it's still, you know, for lack of a better word, an object lesson for others. And so, frankly, I think I see that as a situation. I see the LEC moving ahead with former legislators, former staff, and I also see in the case of legislators, the legislative body refusing to impose a sanction other than receipt of the letter of reprimand or receipt of the letter of wrongdoing. So I see that working by the suggestion to move former legislators and legislative employees for the purpose of non-public information into this section with the same sanction in B. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah.
Discussion on that point. Is there a motion to that effect?
Chairman, I would so move.
Is there any objection to incorporating the, I don't know what the other citation is, but the former legislator's non-public?
It's 190A is going to drop out.
Okay, and then the former legislator's legislative employees for a period of a year, John,
right,
then would be added to 170 with and the civil penalty, civil sanction remaining.
And Lori also proposed, and I think she's right, deleting on line 20 the whole language, including a person with whom the legislator or legislative employee is associated or negotiated prospective employment. Again, her logic is it already says another person, which covers everybody in the world, so why add a specific example?
If I can just say why we did that in several places, and we know that she's absolutely right, it's redundant. But again, the person first reading this often doesn't get it. They often don't say, why are you saying this to me? And that was the most likely situation in which people were going to use it. And we just thought, as an educational tool, to make it very clear when they're first reading it, saying, and we mean when you're negotiating for employment, especially. But it is redundant. But unfortunately, everybody doesn't read these things.
Let's go back to two remaining points on this. Number one is the essence of A, or the subject of A, is there an interest in moving this to commentary or integrating it into existing commentary as appropriate? Is there an interest in doing that?
Well, at the very least, Mr. Chairman, yes, absolutely, so moved. I mean, yeah.
Okay, so it's been moved to, and I don't know, there may be some of this in the commentary. I would interpret the motion to be to move subsection A, page or number 10 on the Josephson sheet, to and integrate that A into existing commentary for purposes of interpreting non-public information. Is there a discussion on that? Is there an objection? If not, so adopted. The second point is on the matter of cross-referencing matters of confidentiality under existing law.
So moved, Mr. Chairman, to add that cross-referencing.
Okay, and I would view that cross-referencing as either a new subsection or an addition to the penalty section that would just say, they would say, a person guilty of disclosure of information made confidential by law is guilty of a class something misdemeanor under AS blah, blah, blah. John, is that?
I think I would be inclined to add it right to the end of the last sentence in A.
Unless, okay.
Made confidential by law,
which
provides disclosure is punishable under such and such.
Is there, I see a value in that.
So do I. I think it's great.
Is there an objection to the motion? If not, so adopted. Is there anything else on...
Well, provision C adds a new thing that you haven't discussed yet. That actually is a new requirement, and I may not want, but it wouldn't be covered
it's
otherwise.
Purposely keeping it a secret, even though it...
Talk about the ramifications of this. Is there an interest in pursuing C? Number 11, page 16, line 2. Misuse of title. Okay, reinsert or another person.
This is, by the way, just another example of what I said before. It is redundant. It's not necessary from a point of view of what it covers. It was just designed to remind people the situations where this is most commonly used, you know, statute.
Where would it fit?
Top of page 16, after employee. What is this in B? Oh, and add B from 14, lines 25 through 27. Okay, so, oh, I see. So this sentence, or another person, then the following sentence will be added, or use the second sentence as an example in the commentary of what this provision includes.
Mr. Chairman, my problem with or another person is to get back to the argument of
helping out constituents and what that involves.
Right.
And
that's why we
deleted it to begin with. I just don't see that. I think it'd be productive to get back in that discussion.
Well, then why can't we put it in the commentary?
The second sentence I don't have a problem with putting in the commentary, but the or another person is.
Mr. Chairman, I'm so moved about putting the second sentence in the commentary.
Is there any objection to that? Not so adopted.
How about the or another person?
No. Second sentence, or the sentence beginning this provision includes but is not limited to a prohibition against the use of authority, etc. That would be integrated into the commentary. By the way, when we're talking about commentary, I guess I'm, John, is it just a general direction? There may be some words like this, and so I think it has to be integrated in the commentary, not just placed verbatim.
Using
the
word.
Right. Yeah, but we're gonna submit. Well,
okay,
these are
sure.
things that we're gonna run the check on to make sure that they're included.
Who is working on the commentary? Nobody's done a thing on the commentary to date.
Right. Josephson is going to submit his revision of the commentary for our adoption. That hopefully incorporates our changes as they relate to the commentary. Okay, page 16.
How about his other suggestion to add the old language as commentary?
Well, now, what was the old language?
A legislator or legislative employee may not use official letterhead in private matters or refer to the legislator or employee's public position as a means of inducing or intimidating persons to resolve disputes more favorably, provide preferential treatment, or give free tickets, discounts, favors, or other advantages.
I'm opposed to that.
That was the heart of our problem.
Why? You want to be able to use it. What's the matter with that?
Well, there's all sorts of parts of it. I agree with free tickets, but I don't agree with trying to influence decisions. We have this whole other section, which is the helping constituents section.
Yeah, but that's not helping constituents. That's using your letterhead for private gain.
No.
Let's read. John, can you read it again? And maybe, Lauren?
This is the section that I rewrote. And what I did was I took that B and I took the most important part, including Senator Baker's concern on official letterhead, and put it into A.
Where? What page?
180. Section 180 on page 15.
Well, there's nothing. I mean, we didn't take. I know we took the. We took the verbs out of it. I mean, we used the verb, but it's not that.
Yeah,
question
this is
a
whole set.
The question is use of examples,
right,
either in the statute or in the commentary. And, well, John, what I was wondering is if we could reread that and forget, I mean.
Just the end part of it?
Well, where we talk, yeah, just read it.
A legislator or employee may not use official letterhead in private matters or refer to the legislator or employee's public position as a means of inducing or intimidating persons to resolve disputes more favorably, provide preferential treatment, or give free tickets, discounts, favors, or other advantages.
Okay, I think it's probably starting with what we shouldn't do for free tickets and other
discounts.
That could be expanded in the commentary. It's the first part just before you get to tickets that was the need of the problem.
Inducing people to resolve disputes.
Well, but for private matter, not for public matter. For the private matter is fine.
What?
Intimidating people for a private matter, you know. That part, except for like one phrase in there, I think that's good stuff.
I do too. I don't understand what's the matter.
I don't think
with
it says that.
It isn't clear who we're
talking about. Letterhead in private matters or refer to title as a means of inducing persons to resolve disputes. And I don't. You could say private disputes, certainly.
Well, eliminate that or business. What do you got when you?
If you eliminate the or, then it gets ugly grammatically.
Yeah, because the way it reads now, if we'd have to insert private.
It's two separate concepts, basically. One says you can't use your letterhead for private purposes, and two is talking about using your position. And that's not limited to private as it currently exists.
I don't think we should be using our letterhead for private purposes.
Well, I don't think anybody
should be using your letterhead to send Christmas cards.
Right.
I really don't. I don't think you should be using your letterhead to be sending thank you notes for your campaign contributions.
Right.
I think that's
right.
bad.
Right. Right.
And I get thank you notes from my fellow
right.
legislators.
We're all saying that's right. So
we're all saying that's right. It's the second half that's the problem.
Right.
Or title for...
See, we could all... I mean, I guess what I'm envisioning is picking up some subject, some verb, and then going into such as
right.
tickets, favors, or, you know, discounts, special discounts.
Right.
Yeah. The commentary is an expansion of what we're talking about.
Yeah. Because as the way I read it, the sentence as written right now, if I picked up the phone and said, hello, this is Representative Mike Feller, I have a problem that we need to, you know, I have a constituent that needs to resolve this problem. Because the word private is not inserted before that part of the phrase.
Well, wonder if the commentary, we limited ourselves to what Senator Fakes gave as an example on my letter.
Right, yeah.
Wonder if we just broke those things apart here for a second as far as commentary. Just talk about letterhead.
Right.
And then talk about letterhead in relation to some examples of why, where you shouldn't use official letterhead or... official letterhead.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, yeah. We only got 15 minutes before we've got to go. If someone wants to change these things, I suggest that they rewrite and bring it back to the committee later. Because, you know, we obviously agree with part of this, and someone could bring back a sentence later. We wouldn't have to discuss it. I think we should just plow through as much of those as we can, just floating up or down. We discussed them yesterday, and I think we understand them well enough to at least resolve them. If we can't resolve someone, we can set them aside and do it later, but I think we could get through most of these in 15 minutes.
I would like to see in the commentary a sentence that speaks to that the misuse of a title or official letterhead includes soliciting special discounts, favors,
tickets.
And just
okay, can we please say no Christmas cards and thank you notes for campaign
Christmas cards. Thank you notes for campaign contributions.
Okay, number 13 is a big one.
Okay, is that a motion?
So moved.
Is there any objection to including a sentence along those conceptual lines in the commentary? If not, so adopted. Okay, page 16, line 21. Political endorsements. Endorsed by the Speaker of the House, Chairman of the Finance Committee.
So he was saying that some states just use those titles, that they misuse them, they use them in endorsements, political endorsements or whatever. And he said that was pointed out.
That kind of endorsement here gets you in trouble. Well, we could maybe put that in the note that in the commentary, right?
Well, I'm not sure we've agreed there's anything wrong with it. As a matter of fact, I think I used something to this effect before. And it didn't seem inappropriate.
Well, you're using the person's title. Wow.
I just think I referred to Speaker Sam Cotton or something. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's not the problem.
Yeah, that's not
it's
the problem.
Sam Cotton, Speaker of the House. It's when you just use the Speaker of the House and you don't link it to the name. That's what this is. What this is referring to.
Yeah, it isn't completely clear to me.
I'm progress. I'm not grasping the survey.
Okay, then let's. I agree with him. Then we can move on. If somebody doesn't feel strongly about one of these, we can move on. But he said it was a problem in certain states. So we don't have it. We don't have it. Because number 13 is his number one deal. His most important one.
Let's cover that.
Page 17.
I think it's a problem, but I'm not going to use it.
Yeah, I think it is a problem too, but I'm not going to belabor it.
I was just thinking of his political activity. Speaker of the House says,
so David
yeah, and he was doing that because it carried clout. I mean, he was using that title to make an impact and effect, and I don't think that's right.
But how would you phrase it? I mean, how would
but
you?
But no one complained about
he
that.
Said Sam Cotton, Speaker of the House, is the way you reference it.
So how do you write that? I mean, how do you? You can say Speaker of the House Sam Cotton, but you can't say Sam Cotton, or you can say Sam Cotton Speaker of the House, but you can't say Speaker of the House.
You just
Sam
simply
Cotton.
Say you don't use the titles without the complete name. You don't just use the title. You must include the person's name with it. That's all.
If you use the title, you must use the name.
Yes, right.
I don't have a problem with that.
I
But it's a real...
We'll take it up on the next rewrite of the Legislative Ethics Committee next year.
Okay, this is always amendable.
Yep.
Right.
Page 17, line 21. No, not line 21. Line 4 through 12. Okay. His suggestion was making this broader for legislators than legislative assistants.
Right.
We had lumped them
right.
together
no
after much
between legislators
debate.
And legislators. Right. Here's the three problems. No distinction between legislatures and legislative assistants. He didn't think that was fair. We have more juice than they do, therefore we should have more restrictions. Only limited to formal lobbying. He didn't think that was complete enough, and it doesn't cover the agencies. Thanks. You need to put the agencies, because that's... And then the part about if you're chairman of the finance committee and you have...
That's the important part.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't feel like there's any lack of debate on this. I'm sure we had at least 45 minutes of debate on this, if not longer. There was reasons for every point we reached. The only thing I can see changing is if he doesn't want to treat legislative agencies the same as legislators, is to take them out completely out of this section. And in fact, you know, I was thinking about it, and I can only think of one example in the last 6 years where a legislative aide has ever even become an all-out registered lobbyist. I mean, it just...
Let's forget legislative aide.
Right, that's one of his points here, is to draw differentiation between the two.
Right.
He wants them treated at a different level. Mm-hmm. And I'm just saying that's the only part of this I can agree to, is to lower the effect on legislative aides. Other than that,
lower the effect.
Yeah, I'm not sure they should be in this at all.
Mr. Chairman, I will move the Josephson language, lines 4 through 12, page 17.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if we get back to this, we're just totally going to bog down. We've spent at least 45 minutes coming to the conclusion of this committee on this without any lack of information on our part. And we went through why we felt, we argued about why people should be able to go to the administration, why it wasn't inappropriate for Arla Sturgeliski's aides to accompany her into the governor's office. We talked about the ramification of representational lobbyists. We talked about volunteer lobbyists. We covered a whole variety of areas, and we came up with what the committee supported as an acceptable compromise.
Okay.
I see no reason to...
Well, then why are we going over any of this, David?
Because some of these are new ideas that we didn't discuss very long. This one we discussed at least 45 minutes.
I don't care if we discussed it for 3 hours. I think it deserves being revisited.
Well, I'm just... opposing it, that's all.
There's a motion on the floor, right?
Okay. I don't know quite how to discussion. Under discussion on I think C, D, F, a lot of that is just the separation. What I see as needing as the critical thing here is B, subsection B, where I read that as in addition to being a registered lobbyist, what you're adding for legislators only is being a representative, not a lobbyist, a representative seeking to influence the legislative process or state agency, public official, or employee over which the former legislator has special oversight. I don't see that as unreasonable. I mean, you have to have a special oversight relationship when you're dealing with any of the rest except the legislature. And in addition to being a registered lobbyist, you couldn't be a representative for someone else seeking legislative action.
And Mr. Chairman, on the first line on the top of the next page where it says, or special oversight or budget authority, I can insert or direct budget authority, because a subcommittee member would have budget authority in the normal person's head, but we all know that's not the case. So direct would mean the chairman of the subcommittee or the co-chairman of finance.
And Mr. Chairman,
I would move that we insert the word direct.
Are we talking about replacing the B section for the B section on the top of page 17. I think I agree with Senator Fakes. I think this is more clear, more direct.
It is for compensation. It's specifically for compensation.
Mr. Chairman, now we get back to our situation where you got the guy who's left the legislature. He's working for the bank. Now we've grabbed him again. He comes down here for a couple hours to lobby on a specific issue for compensation for the bank. He's representing the bank. That may be the only time he comes down here.
We're not talking about somebody testifying.
He's exempt, though. 4 hours. You got to do the 4 hours.
Oh, no. Or a representative for another speaking. You've added him back in.
You've left off your volunteer lobbyists in your representational office if you do that. Because those, there would be no lobbyist exemption.
Right. You've reached out and grabbed him again.
Well, we can keep this B, put this B in here, and this means a person that's registered to lobby. This does not include the volunteer. We can leave that part in. The B1-2, leave it in.
We can also clarify the commentary.
So you put in, you substitute your B for B, and then leave this 1 and 2 in there so that it's the registered
lobby. Because then you're saying two different things.
Yeah.
Commentary from what the law says. You got to...
Well, the law is more precise. The commentary broadens it out. I mean, we do that all through that commentary.
But, no, Mr. Chairman, the other thing, this is only for 1 year.
Right.
It's just 1 year. This isn't for life.
Right, but... Representative,
it needs to be clear. The choices are either you can't be a registered lobbyist, that's one choice, or you can't be a registered lobbyist or a representative for another, which gets into... areas we don't even know what it gets into because we've never used that definition. We've only got, you know, various kinds of lobbyist definitions may include. This is one that we don't even know what it means, and it reaches out a long way.
Right. Here's one threshold question for B1 on the Josephson. Do you want to allow a former legislator in the first year to come to Juneau once or twice and speak on behalf of getting a nonprofit or come on with which he's a board member of? I mean, do you want him to do that? I mean,
it depends on who it is. I don't think so.
If they have
the juice.
Yeah, if you don't, then we're because I mean, for a year, if you say you don't want to do that, then this language is okay. If you want them to be qualified as a volunteer lobbyist, you know, without compensation, then you've got to go back and tie your lobbyist definition because you can't be a representative, right?
The lobbying law doesn't address representatives outside of the strict sense of being a lobbyist.
But having said that, okay, that's one threshold question. The other is, and two, you could, regardless of your definition of lobbyist or representative, you could still have two. You can still go to add back two in addition to any decision on one, B1.
Repeat that again.
I just,
one and two are separate concepts.
Right.
Right.
Okay, you can define who you want, the level of legislative lobbying. You can, on a former member, it can be, you know, volunteer, no volunteer, either way, for one, but you could still, regardless of that decision, you can still have another prohibition for state agencies if you had special oversight and direct budget authority. And I think Mr. Josephson suggested that is part of the classic revolving door problem and the perceived problem also. Where the guy that works, you know, for 5 years with the admin budget and everything and then goes over and becomes a, you know, top procurement officer with the admin department of administration. Or, that's something else.
Yeah,
who then goes, works for a private company.
Company.
To have access into all the guys that he's dealt with on procurement.
Right.
I'm sorry.
So how give us a path out of this one. What are we talking about?
Get rid of that or representative for another, and I think you'll be fairly well covered.
Yeah,
and you put and you've got the administrative lobbying in there.
So, or I'll move to take out or represent for another.
Brooke, they would have to register, right? An administrative lobbyist has to register.
Mm-hmm. If they spend more than four, if they're a regular employee, and spend more than 4 hours.
So, we adopt this B. We adopt B, and then put subsection 2 that does not include a volunteer lobbyist.
No, we would
the definition.
Of,
yeah, that this is going out.
Yeah, that's a definition.
The standard definition of lobbyist now means somebody that has to register, which means you are either a contract employee. I mean, you're either a contract lobbyist Or you're a salaried employee who spends more than 4 hours a month.
What about these volunteers?
Volunteers are in representation. Volunteers who don't get anything are not covered by this. Representational who get expenses reimbursed but no fee are also not covered by this.
This is for compensation. But they're just coming down. They're not getting paid.
Oh, for
if this says well, that's may not for compensation.
That's consistent with our definition.
Redundant.
All right. That is consistent with our definition.
Redundant.
Well actually, though, compensation, now, what did we decide generically on?
It's
per
redundant.
Diem?
I am going to take that word out. That will only confuse
that. Will confuse because we've tried to draw a line on per diem reimbursement as, I think, not being compensation.
Well, actually, your definition of compensation has that now, and that needs to come out.
Okay. Was there a motion to the effect that we would adopt and incorporate B with the following changes, that compensation come out and we're going to make that consistent, that the afterward lobbyist on the line 2 or a representative for another in seeking to influence A come out, one or another comes out. And then one is there, two is there, but on the top of the next page, the four budget, the word direct would occur. And how does that compare to the original language? I thought there was some specific language in the first Josephson draft.
About what?
About
oversight.
Oversight.
Yeah, you would be picking up the name. Actually, you'd have to delete one line in here. A person is considered to have had special oversight or budget authority over an agency if the person served within the last year of the person's legislative term as the Senate President, Speaker of the House, Chair of the Finance Committee of either House, or as Chair of a committee. And you probably would want to put in, or Finance Subcommittee?
No, I don't
okay.
think you want to.
Directly concerned on a regular basis with the agency's activities. It also says or served as a ledger system.
That
okay,
and,
okay,
okay
and,
that,
and that's the C, and that's C?
That's C, which will now become, yeah, that's
okay.
C.
Okay.
Okay.
If we can insert that language back in.
Okay, now I would like to hold off on, what I'd like to do is rather than B, F, et cetera, I would like to keep our very simple language for legislative assistant as we have it. Okay, and then G, we don't need G if we keep our definition. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, is the motion understood? C, by the way, is that we would, the motion would adopt C, which is what John just read. Is there discussion on the motion?
The stuff that dropped out, you're saying, the C that...
C is the definition of a oversight, what special oversight or budgetary authority is.
Yeah, that's fine.
Is there any objection to that motion? If not, throw it down. Okay. Page 14, lines, that says, I'm sorry, page 18, line 26, proper use of campaign funds. Line 26 was the words, as part of a candidate's governmental activities and duties. I think that Joseph has made a good point on governmental. He had suggested defining it, and I don't know, we haven't used that term much in here. That doesn't have particular meaning.
Right.
We've usually used official.
Duties, official duties.
We got it.
Okay, Laureato has a conceptual problem with this whole idea. She read this thing and says, does that mean if you take a bribe as part of your governmental duties that you can use your campaign funds to pay for your defense?
I'll get back.
And I said, well, depends how you define governmental duties, but it's problematical, I think. It's awful. It could be read awful broadly.
Well, as Mr. Davis said, what is our path to this? I think we know what we're talking about. We're talking about, I think we know what we're talking about. How do we say that? Oftentimes, in our existing ethics statute, when we've talked about travel, okay travel, we've used words like for official legislative business and things like that. And I, again, I don't know if those terms are precise.
How about within the scope of? That's the usual word. Taking a bribe isn't within the scope of your duties. I mean, I think the point of this is if you fire an aide and the aide sues you,
right,
that's within the scope of your duties.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I would so move the language within the scope of the legislative duties.
We're talking about candidates.
Of the candidate's activities and duties.
A candidate, that doesn't make sense in itself. Yeah, it's a candidate.
Well, you're talking about the proper use of campaign funds for a legislator. I mean, that's it. It's a legislative candidate. It's up there on page 9, or line 9. So it's a legislative candidate we're talking about here.
You know, we have campaign funds now under this bill when we are not a candidate. And this is proper uses of campaign funds.
We have $1,000.
$5,000
first. $5, right? How about, or out of the performance of activities within the scope of the candidate's legislative activities and duties?
That's wonderful.
Good.
So moved, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Good. Language is just wonderful.
Any of the word activity twice.
Any objections to that, to the Gagin motion? If not, so adopted.
Very good.
We had it on tape.
Moderate.
Can
you read it? No, I guess I can't.
I'll figure out.
Rewind the tape.
I'll figure out what it was. And activities arising out of the within the scope. Activities within the scope of a candidate's legislative duties. Or would you rather have responsibilities?
Duties.
Okay. Out of the performance of activities within the scope of a candidate's legislative duties.
Okay. Page 18 and 19, section 205 on uses of campaign funds, suggested commentary. Campaign funds could not be used in a way that would grieve the mind, blah, blah, blah.
He said this is the way they siphon money and give it to the family members.
Yeah. Any objection to that? If not, so moved. Page 25, turning pages. Line 1, fundraising limitations. Okay, this would be following at the top of page 25, there would be, in addition to B, a legislator may not either directly through a campaign committee or other means solicit or accept a campaign contribution, etc., while the legislature is in regular session, nor may a legislator solicit funds, hold a fundraiser event for any other person or otherwise encourage persons to contribute to a political campaign of any sort.
Well, I think this is a good provision, Mr. Chairman, that, you know, then, let's say, a Juneau representative couldn't have a fundraiser for a local mayoral candidate or whatever. I think this is a good suggestion. I haven't looked at it, how it merges with everything else here.
Okay, my concern that I expressed, I think, last night was the words, or otherwise encourage persons to contribute.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That, I think, is very problematic. Mm-hmm. But besides that, I guess I have a personal reaction to that. I don't know. To me, that's bordering on your rights to free speech and of anybody, not just being a legislator. I mean, just being talking to people and urging support for someone else, short of but not soliciting funds. Mm-hmm. Further, is there discussion on that?
We've covered all this.
Well, no. This is a different. This is another concept. Because you can't do it for yourself, and you can't do some specific things for others during the session. I think his example was a good one. That's another way of exercising juice, where you know the chairman of the finance committee, who's the Senate, has a favorite guy who he wants to run for the House district. And make sure there's a whole lot of people come to the guy's fundraiser, and it's part of his political power and part of his political objectives.
All right, then we can't stand up on the floor and say contribute the money for the prayer of the glory hole?
No.
This
provision does not prevent...
Political charitable organization.
For a bona fide... Well, we would say a charitable...
Okay, all right, it does not prevent...
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, just get rid of bona fide there, since you've been doing
right,
it everywhere else.
Right. Representative Davis, Miller, who made that amendment?
I did.
What is your feeling on amending it on or otherwise encourage persons to?
That's true. That's true.
Okay, so the amendment would be at the top of page 25, at line 1, in addition to the direct fundraising during the session, to add to the sentence, nor may a legislator solicit funds or host a fundraiser event for any other person while the legislature is in session. This provision does not prevent fundraising activities and for a charitable organization as defined under USC blah blah blah, provided such activities comply with 2462.30, which is what?
Read that again. What did you strike on the second line
version?
Or otherwise encourage persons
to contribute to a political campaign.
I would suggest you need the word or in there still.
Where?
It should be may not for any other person or a political campaign of any sort. I mean, if you take the or out, it sort of gets grammatically nonsensical. Oh, they did?
I wouldn't use or any sort. I would just put or any other political campaign while the legislature's in session.
Well, again, that gets to your initiative issue. Maybe you should.
I think
maybe what you did makes a lot more sense. Just get rid of the whole thing.
Okay.
So when you get it together, I'd like
the
motion
review. Well, that's a question. I mean, any other person needs, of course, any candidate person probably would not involve a fundraiser or ballot initiative, which I mean is a less that's not I mean that's a less lesser problem for sure. So let's. I'd be more comfortable leaving that. I think the motion would be to add, nor may a legislator solicit funds or host a fundraising event for any other person while the legislature is in session.
Can I suggest put campaign in front of funds and campaign in front of fundraisers just to make it crystal clear that's what you're talking about?
Right. Yeah, campaign, because that's consistent then with the next sentence. This provision does not prevent fundraising activities for a charitable organization under USC, blah, 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 provided such sections comply with 2462.230, which is coercion, where you're coercing people to donate.
Mr. Chairman, are our districts
a charitable organization? Are the political parties charitable organizations? I mean, you guys took out the word non-political. Why?
Oh, I didn't take it out. Did you take that one out?
Yes, he read it as not. He didn't read non-political.
I guess I was assuming charitable organizations. There's two kinds of. Actually, there's two kinds of nonprofits.
We're not talking about nonprofits. I see a lot of those things as being political out there.
I think it's, well.
We don't, maybe we mean, I don't know what we mean.
You didn't say non-political, and it's in there. So if you'll just read non-political, I'll feel better.
Is the League of Women Voters non-political?
I certainly wouldn't think so.
No.
They take stands on stuff. They might think they're non-political. I don't think they are.
Okay, I think it's clear that, though, these aren't, we're not soliciting, soliciting campaign fund. What I think it's clear that we're talking about campaign funds and campaign fundraisers. We're not talking about having a fundraiser for
this actually can be solved with the technical reference, because there's, is anybody here familiar with those? I mean, there is a distinction between there is a distinction in the tax statutes relating to political versus non-political.
501c3 is your non-politicals.
Right. And I think that's...
However, I think feel quite confident that includes the League of Women Voters.
It does.
It does.
Yes,
yeah,
I
because
think...
Because they're nonpartisan. They may be political. Same thing as the Sierra Club. The Sierra Club certainly is politically active, but it's not...
But that's the line that the IRS draws. I'm comfortable with that. I mean, it's like oil spill. If the Sierra Club had a fund to raise money for Prince William Sound oil spill, I mean, that would be... That would be permitted. If they met the other IRS.
Could it be changed just by changing...
See, I don't think the Sierra Club should be having a fundraiser during the session.
They could have a fundraiser.
Sierra Club isn't qualified. Like I spoke wrong, but the Wilderness Society is. So.
We just couldn't have one form.
I should have used another example.
Yes.
There is a ton of other examples.
Could you read your amendment then?
Nor may a legislator solicit or host a fundraising event for any other person while the legislature is in session. This provision does not prevent fundraising activities for a charitable organization under USC blah blah blah, provided such activities comply with AS 2461-23.
Okay, why do you guys want to give money to other people, other legislators?
We don't.
Well, that's you took prohibited. That out. You or contribute.
No.
Right. We're going to go through this argument again, but otherwise encourage persons. That doesn't mean anything. I mean, or what it means is a whole range of activities.
Okay. And you're right. I'll leave it. That's fine. Yeah. Let's go. Sorry.
Any objection to that? If not, it's so adopted.
I have a question. As long as we're on this page 25, why, let me just ask a question. Why do we have a provision in here that the June 1 through November provision? Why do we?
Because we cut off any post-election fundraising, totally. The fundraising stops the day of the election.
No. I'm saying June 1. In other words, we get out of session May 9th. We can't send out a newsletter, or we can't send out a flyer. We can't even do anything until the 1st of June. So we have 3 weeks we have to sort of like...
No. You can't raise funds. You can spend money. You'll have raised money.
Your fundraiser has to be on June 1st.
The new system, the new political system, will be heavy fundraising in the fall. That's the new one. You will have several thousand dollars in the bank.
Okay, I understand that, but does that mean that you cannot do anything? You can't even send out anything?
No, wait.
It means you can't raise money.
You can't.
Just says raise funds.
You can't take a contribution.
So you have to send your letters out just before you go. Mm-hmm. All right. I just wondered why we put that 3 week window in there.
Well, actually,
it's not always 3 weeks.
See, next year it'll only be.
Yeah, it'll only be a week next week.
Yeah, I'm not sure. By the way, at that point puzzles me too. I mean, I don't see any. I think there's going to be tremendous urge to hit the ground running the day after the session ends. I don't know what other people think about it. I think you're going to have a lot of gray stuff going on in terms of raising funds, even now, not spending, but I think people are going to want to start getting checks in the mail and stuff like that after the session.
Especially depending on how they fared in the legislative session. But
don't you think there should be a dust settling time, you know, when the newspapers are talking about the session?
Yes, vetoes.
Yeah, the vetoes are coming up. You're still, I mean, I don't know of anybody who just walks out this door and doesn't turn around and tries to make phone calls still.
I agree.
On veto
overrides.
Right,
you're right. Yep.
I mean, if the door just came down on the day of the session, it'd be one thing, but we got post-session work that some of us do a lot of.
Plus, you get instant reward, instant gratification. Sure liked your vote last night. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, I just...
2 weeks gives the lobbyists a chance to get out of town and to, you know...
Forget about you.
Yeah.
Can I go back to the...
You're right.
Can I go back to the other one?
Okay.
On charitable organizations?
I wanted to raise that.
Is there anything wrong with somebody like Peter Gall, who was a strong environmentalist, with hosting a fundraiser for the Alaska Environmental Lobby?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Use other examples, John. there's other kinds of examples besides environment.
No, I am just, you know, cutting it off. It's it, you act.